Well, thank you, Keith, for leading that song. I asked him if he knew it, and he said not very well, but he said there's no reason not to go forward, and that's a good song. It's a sort of a classical tune, but the words to it are excellent, and I appreciate him leading that for us. If you would turn your Bibles to the book of Daniel, chapter 1, that's what we'll be studying, Lord willing, tonight. I again want to express my appreciation for every kindness that you've shown me this week. It's just been a joy, and I'm getting full up with eating, and so my diaphragm doesn't work as well as it used to, but I have enjoyed every bite and every word that we have shared over such occasions. Not too long ago, you'll remember, there was a significant earthquake in Japan, tsunami that ensued, and many people perished. Nuclear power plant was leaking radiation. Just all kinds of unexpected things were happening. Just this last week, a series of tornadoes, I don't know how many, but many tornadoes ripped through the South and took the lives of a number of people. A couple of those were Christians that I know of. I heard one of them was a member of a congregation where David Hartzell preaches. She was a student. Another was a student from Virginia who was in school down there. And his parents went down and tried to find him. They thought they'd found him, but DNA showed it wasn't him. And they continued to search, and then they did find him, and he perished. We're talking 18, 19, 20-year-olds. On January 3rd of this year, I was in about a half an hour away from home, and I got a call saying, would you please pray for Brianna? She had pink eye, and her mother was taking her to a doctor, and she started to pass a semi, and the semi pulled across in front of her, and they hit the rear of the semi, and it did some permanent brain damage for Brianna. She has paralysis that she's trying to work through. That night, in the middle of the night, they had to do emergency surgery because there was a blood clot that had gone to the brain. It killed a portion of the brain. That night, it was amazing that she lived through the surgery. Just a fantastic neurosurgeon who was the head guy in that area took care of her. She couldn't have had better human help. But there was like a 70% chance she wouldn't even survive the surgery. She was a collegiate softball player, able, strong-minded, tough, stubborn as anybody in here. And God can find ways to humble us if we'll not humble ourselves. I believe she's doing pretty well now. She comes in on a stick, has gone through just therapy that has been tremendous. And by tremendous, I mean long and hard, day in and day out. Her folks are fighters. They're both stubborn people, but they're very determined, a more gentle term to use. But they have just pushed forward in all this. But I am confident that it has changed Brianna's life spiritually. And I would say there's probably some things that she was involved with that I would have been ashamed of before. I don't know all the details about that. But whether we are young or old, we just need to understand we stand to give an account to God. And as we live our lives, we need to live every day as though we may meet God today. And I'm talking about old, old, old people like me. And even people that are older than I am. And younger people. That's how we need to live our life. In about the 600 BC time frame, there was a young man and his associates taken from their home in Jerusalem into the land of Babylon, probably teenagers, best we can put together. Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, as we normally refer to them. And as you look at the course of Daniel, you see that Daniel had to be a pretty young fella at the beginning because you see that He not only endured the course of the Babylonian Empire, but you see in the fifth chapter where Darius is going to come in, that he is going to be involved there and beyond. And we see it actually goes ahead to tell us in the last verse of chapter 1, Daniel continued until the first year of Cyrus the king. And actually, as you keep reading later, you find out he continued beyond that, but that's just a marker to say that he was around for a long time. And all that, if you just do the math, what's necessarily a conclusion is he was just a young fellow. And these other fellows were as well. He was taken in an unexpected way. They were going on about their lives. There were some preachers, stupid preachers, preachers who said, you need to quit living like you're living. You need to quit living after the world. You need to turn back and serve God. Men like Jeremiah. Man like Daniel, we're going to see here later. Another contemporary is Ezekiel, that we're going to see is preaching at this same time period. And there's another fellow named Zephaniah who's also speaking at this time period. And Habakkuk, who was brokenhearted because of the wickedness. He had seen what was happening under Josiah. And when Josiah died, for about 3 months his son ruled. And then Jehoiakim, his son, began to rule. And things were just in going from bad to worse. And Habakkuk was feeling that. He was living the same time that we're talking about here in Daniel chapter 1. And so as all that is going on, these young men, particularly four that are named here, are men that are taken out of their routine measure of life into a foreign country to live the rest of their life. Now you may say, well, that's unfair. And it was. But in part, it was the consequence of the sin of the people. That's why they went into captivity, and that is clearly declared again and again and again, both for the 10 tribes of Israel when they went into captivity and for the two tribes that the prophets were warning about. And you know what the other folks were saying in Jeremiah's writings? Peace, peace, everything's going to be okay. That's what the preachers in Judah were saying. And Jeremiah says, it's not going to be that way. Captivity is coming. Again, we could talk a lot more about all that, but the problem was sin. But that kind of sin creates consequences in the lives of other people. And as we look at Daniel, we see these men were taken in their youth. It was not fair. They were taken into captivity, and it was unexpected. And you see all those things. You might say, well, what could they do? And what should they do? Tonight I want to read down through this chapter real briefly with you. And I'm just going to have five simple points up here that we can take from this chapter. We could extrapolate other information from chapter 2 and chapter 3 and chapter 6 and so forth. But we're going to basically try to keep our focus on chapter 1. And so as we do, let's begin by reading verse 1. Daniel chapter 1, verse 1. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, along with some of the vessels of the house of God. And he brought them to the land of Shinar, to the house of his God. And he brought the vessels into the treasury of his God. Then the king ordered Ashpenaz, the chief of his officials, to bring in some of the sons of Israel, including some of the royal family and of the nobles. Youths in whom were no defect, who were good-looking, showing intelligence in every branch of wisdom, endowed with understanding and discerning knowledge, and who had ability for serving in the king's court. And he ordered him to teach them the literature and the language of the Chaldeans. And the king appointed for them a daily ration from the king's choice food and from the wine which he drank, and appointed that they should be educated 3 years, at the end of which they were to enter the king's personal service. Now among them from the sons of Judah were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Then the commander of the officials assigned new names to them. And to Daniel, he assigned the name Belteshazzar, to Hananiah, Shadrach, to Mishael, Meshach, and to Azariah, Abednego. But Daniel made up his mind that he would not defile himself with the king's choice food or with the wine which he drank. So he sought permission from the commander of the officials that he might not defile himself. Now God granted Daniel favor and compassion in the sight of the commander of the officials. And the commander of the officials said to Daniel, I am afraid of my lord the king, who has appointed your food and your drink, for why should he see your faces looking more haggard than the youths who are your own age? Then you would make me forfeit my head to the king. But Daniel said to the overseer, whom the commander of the officials had appointed to Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, please test your servants for 10 days, and let us be given some vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then let our appearance be observed in your presence and the appearance of the youths who are eating the king's choice food, and deal with your servants according to what you see. So he listened to them in this matter and tested them for 10 days. And at the end of 10 days, their appearance seemed better than they were fatter than all the youths who had been eating the king's choice food. So the overseer continued to withhold their choice food and the wine they were to drink, and kept giving them vegetables. And as for these four youths, God gave them knowledge and intelligence in every branch of literature and of wisdom. Daniel even understood all kinds of visions and dreams. Then at the end of the days, which the king had specified for presenting them, the commander of the officials presented them before Nebuchadnezzar, and the king talked with them, and out of them all, not one was found like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah, so they entered the king's personal service. And as for every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king consulted them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and conjurers who were in his realm. And Daniel continued until the first year of Cyrus, the king. As you notice the reading here, obviously you find the circumstances aren't very good. I was talking with Brother Morris. My wife pointed out something to me a few days ago when we were talking. She said, have you ever thought over in Luke chapter 1, verse 6 and 7, where it talks about Zechariah and Elizabeth, you remember she was barren, couldn't have children, and that God was going to allow her to have a child, and his name was going to be John the Baptist. Well, you remember that Zechariah is saying, well, you know, how do I know this can be so? Because, you know, we're not able to do that. And so he was not able to speak until John was born. But what it says, verse 6, they were both righteous before God. But the next verse tells us that they were both advanced in years. And I was looking up here. I reached over a minute ago to get the New King James translation, and it renders it even a little harsher than that. I can't remember what it was, but they're getting old. But the point that my wife pointed out is that, do you remember that the priests only served from about 25 years old to 50? Zechariah was still serving as a priest. And so what does that tell you about an old guy like me? If it's well advanced in years, and it wasn't 50 years old yet, apparently. Our perception of life sometimes isn't very good. That's my point. As we look at these young men, they had their whole life in front of them. From an old person's perspective, life just passes quickly. When you're young, it seems like I've got a whole life ahead of me. But things can change rapidly, as they did with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And as we read here in Daniel chapter 1, all these unexpected things indeed took place. The first thing I want us to notice is that they were young, but they were faithful. These were young men, and yet they were faithful to God. They had a very rough start. You know, in some young people like these folks, they did very mature things, very appropriate things, very committed things, a reflection of their character and their commitment. You can look at other folks, maybe like David's son Absalom. He was a very gifted fellow, but he just kept, you know, talking to the people and trying to undercut his father's influence, and finally incited a rebellion against him. Absalom was just not a good man. Let's just say it, call it what it is. He was as handsome as he could be, and he had a lot of charm, but he had no character. And so you see a huge contrast, and we could look at lots of other examples. But in this, we see these young people are being faithful. You may remember over in Acts, the 16th chapter, in verse 1, there was a young man by the name of Timothy. And again, apparently Timothy was a teenager at that time frame. We're not given an age, but again, as you look at the years that passed and some things that Paul said in 1 and 2 Timothy in regard to Timothy. He couldn't have been terribly old at the time Acts 16 took place. He was a young man who's going to go forward, and he's going to work with Paul and preach and teach, and is a responsible man. And Paul again says in Philippians 2, I don't have anybody like-minded like him. A young man. Simply because we're young doesn't mean we have to go the way of the world. Simply because we're young doesn't mean we can just sow our wild oats and do what we want to, and that the rules and the will of God are laid aside in some way. We live in a society who thinks that way. And as I mentioned in a lesson that I did a couple nights ago, I think it was, postmodernism, where there's no real right and wrong and there's no truth anymore, is a mindset and the philosophy of the world in which we live, and we see it on our TV and on our internets and our newspapers. But it's not the scripture, it's not the truth ultimately. It's what men do, but it's not what's right. And these young men, as they are taken into captivity, it was indeed unfair, but they chose to do what's right. And you know, sometimes older people act very childish and immature and irresponsible. And that's a shame too. And so all kinds of people do all kinds of things, is the point. Age is really, in part, not the primary factor. It's just where our heart is and what we choose to do. How would you feel as a parent if your children were snatched up from Jerusalem and taken to Babylon? I don't know whether the parents went also. I presume that the parents had been taken as well, but there is never any mention of that or any indication of that anywhere in the book of Daniel. And so that's an assumption. And this particular incident, when they were taken into this captivity as young men, would have been around 605, 606 BC. The first time that Nebuchadnezzar came through, he took the best of the land. He took the folks that were of royal seed and folks that had skill, the craftsmen, folks that were just sort of the cream of the crop, the best that Jerusalem had to offer. That's what went with him the first time. A few years later, there were some more problems that arose. He came back through in about 597, and he took the next wave of people, sort of the next layer of what was left. And then finally, to make a long story short, they sort of kicked their heels in Jerusalem up against Babylon, and he got tired of it, and he came down, and he broke the city down, and he took everybody except the people that were broke down and sick and elderly. He left them there, and folks that wouldn't be any benefit, and he carried the rest of them off in captivity. This was the first wave. And these were folks that were certainly able folks. And as these young men are there, we see that they already have some commitment. Undoubtedly, as the old law taught, these men had been taught the way of righteousness. They knew something about right and wrong. Parents, if we don't teach our children about right and wrong, they're not going to learn it at school, and they're not going to learn it from the world. That's my responsibility even as a grandparent. I'm trying to do what I can to influence my grandchildren. I don't want to drop the ball from my grandkids. I would rather die than do that, because the souls of my children and my grandchildren are that valuable to me. And you know that as parents and grandparents. You'd die for your children and your grandchildren. And yet sometimes, you know, if we're not careful, we allow what is right and what we ought to do to slide in these spiritual things. Not always by bad intention. Sometimes we do it by ignorance. Sometimes we say, well, you know, they're just young and they'll grow out of it. And I hope and pray they do if that's the case and the problems are going that way. But what we're going to see is these young people had faith in their youth. And this is going to play out in this chapter. And that faith was going to carry them through life. And that's what you see throughout the book of Daniel. Again, we're not studying the whole book, but that's what you're going to see. It carries right on in chapter 2, 3, and 4, and right on down the line. The second thing that you may have already gathered in reading this is that these young men were outstanding. They were on the right side of the bell curve, if you know what I mean by that. They were the cream of the crop. They were the brightest and the best. They were good looking. If you look in verse 4 and verse 5, you see that they didn't have any defects. They were fine specimens who were good looking. They were intelligent in every branch of wisdom, so they were sharp, able. They were endowed with understanding, had discerning knowledge, and who had ability to serve in the king's court. And so you're talking about the folks that come out on top in ability and gifts in that regard. They had the gifts of looks. They had the gifts of intelligence. And yet, the thing I want us to understand, that because they had these gifts, it did not keep them from doing what was right. And they did not compromise the will of God in view of that. Just because folks have good looks and intelligence doesn't mean they have to go bad. Often we encourage and nurture such wrong purpose and goals in life. And you may remember Sunday, I believe it was, we talked about Genesis chapter 4 about Cain and Abel. Cain rose up and killed Abel. We noticed a number of lessons from that. And then Seth was born. And you remember that we noticed in chapter 4 that the lineage of Cain was spoken of in that chapter, and it talks simply about his material accomplishments, the physical accomplishments. In chapter 5, it talks about the lineage of those who feared God, and it talks about the spiritual accomplishments of that lineage. And it referred to as the sons of God and the sons of men kind of deal. Sons of God and the daughters of men by the time you get to chapter 6. And so what we find as you look at these men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and Daniel, that they were men with great capacities, and yet they were spiritually strong, and that was their priority. That's who they were. In February, I was in Sierra Leone, and one of the fellows that I was with was a fellow named Sewell Hall. Some of you may know of Sewell, widely respected man, 80 years old. And we're talking about young people, and he says, I believe there's a counter-revolution that's going on among many of our young people, that many of our young people are tired of the worldliness and the lasciviousness and the carnality that's happening, and they're seeking to follow God. So we've lost a lot of people, but he says, I'm seeing that in a lot of places where many of the young people are making those choices. And that's what you see in these four men. They weren't doing what everybody else was doing. They had chosen to do what was right. And again, as you read the chapter, it's very easy to see. They were nurtured towards righteousness, and that played out in their life. They were gifted men, and that's the reason they were taken from Judah. And as we might say, these fellows were going places. They had the capacity to do that. But they did not sacrifice faith or faithfulness on the altar of achievement in order to accomplish that. In my college studies some years back, one of the terms that would arise in like personality traits and so forth is my cosmic significance. I like that. That's got a nice ring to it. But that just means, what in the world am I doing in this world? Now, what's my purpose? These young men, probably again in their teens, but definitely young, had an idea what that was all about. That they were going to do what was right. And that brings us to the next point that we want to consider here. And that's the fact that they were given to do what's right, and that they were committed to do what God would have them to do. I'd like you to read with me again verse 8. We read all through chapter 1 to give us sort of an overview. You'll remember that it says here that Daniel made up his mind that he would not defile himself with the king's choice food or with the wine which he drank. So he sought permission from the commander of the officials that he might not defile himself. Literally what that says, and my footnote here says literally, set upon his heart. Daniel set upon his heart, or we would say he made up his mind that he would not defile himself. Now I want you to think at what you might consider his disadvantage in this situation. He's been snatched out of his home and the preeminence and the blessings he would have had there. He's been put into a foreign kingdom and been put in a place where he's got some opportunities to have a little better life in a whole new world. And yet he's not going to sacrifice his conviction of right and what God has said, no matter what it takes. See, he made a decision in his heart that he would do what's right. And until we make that decision, then we'll not really know where we're going. I think I was telling Morris earlier in the week, I was on my old motorcycle in Terre Haute, Indiana, which is a town of about 70,000, 80,000 people. And I was on Highway 41, and not very far ahead is an exit to get on Interstate 70. Well, there was a couple of women, and they were just a little older than me, not much, probably. They were in their 60s, probably, I'd guess. And they're driving along here just sort of the side and just a little bit ahead of me. And all of a sudden, she just cranks that wheel and pulls right over in front of me and heads off up that ramp. Saw her license plate said Wisconsin. She didn't know where she was going. And so I was sort of being observant, or she had run into me. And so as I backed off, I followed her up there. I mean, this just happened immediately. I get up on the interstate and see him up here, head sort of looking around and sort of drifting back and forth along the road. And obviously, she didn't know where she was going. Neither one of them apparently knew where they were going. And you know, those are the most dangerous kind of people in the world. People that don't know where they're going. And that's true spiritually. If we don't know who we are and where we're going, we're a train wreck waiting to happen. These young men knew who they were. They were God's servants. They were what we would say today, Christians. They were servants of God. And they knew it, and they were going to do what's right. And Daniel made up his mind in verse 8. And again, you see in verse 12, please test your servants for 10 days and let us be given some vegetables to eat and water to drink. You know, you test us. You do what is ever necessary in here. But he had purpose in his heart. He had decided. And, you know, that had an impact upon others. It had an impact upon his friends. You remember 1 Corinthians chapter 15 and verse 33, where this text is actually talking about false teachers particularly. But in 1 Corinthians 15, 33, it says, be not deceived, bad company corrupts good morals. Now, that applies to a lot of other things besides false teachers, that bad companions and bad company corrupts good morals. The word moral carries with it the idea of standing where we ought to stand, being where we ought to be morally. That's what the root idea behind morals that's translated in the English here means. And bad companionship tends to help us, cause us to drift from where we should be. And so that's an admonition that we have here. A very stern example of that's found over in 1 Kings chapter 21 and verse 25. And you remember the most wicked king in the Old Testament probably that you can think of, and his companion wife. Yeah, Ahab and Jezebel. And in 1 Kings chapter 21, it tells us in verse 25, surely there was no one like Ahab who sold himself to do evil in the sight of the Lord because Jezebel his wife incited him. And a moment ago I mentioned in Luke chapter 1 and verse 6, it talks about Zechariah and Elizabeth. They were both righteous before God. What a beautiful statement. We see companionship makes a difference. There are other passages, 2 Corinthians chapter 6 and verse 14, be not unequally yoked with unbelievers, a series of verses that talk about that. But that actually leads right on into chapter 7 and in verse 1. In 2 Corinthians chapter 7 and verse 1, after those admonitions, he says, therefore, having these promises, beloved, let us cleanse ourselves from all defilement of flesh and spirit, perfecting holiness in the fear of God. That's what these men wanted to do. They wanted to do what would please God. And as Daniel and his friends did, they set their minds and their heart on doing this. They had purposed in their heart. They had decided beforehand. And you know, that's what we basically have to do, generally, at least I can say, at the very least, in regard to temptation. We have to make our mind up before the temptation so that when the temptation comes, we've really already made the decision. I'm going to do what's right. If we don't make our decision before the temptation comes up, we're in jeopardy. I heard that many, many, many years ago, and I've thought about that a lot since. And you know, that's right. And I think about my own life and the challenges and the temptations and my own failures. I have to set my mind where it needs to be. I have to decide I'm going to do what's right, and contemporary peers are not going to move me from that, just like with Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They set their mind on the things that are right. But you know, sometimes when you do that, it makes life a little bit rough and difficult. I had a man tell me a story some years ago that I liked, and it was a felon. And he had some friends that didn't like him, and so they threw him in a hole, rhyming sort of Joseph, threw him in a pit. And then they started shoveling dirt in on top of him. as he was in this hole. And he had two choices. He could either let them cover him up, or what he did is every time they threw dirt in on top of him, he just stepped up and got on top of the dirt. And you know what happened eventually? He could step right out of that hole. And when people treat us wrong, like Daniel, Shadrach, and Meshach, and Abednego are going to face in the following chapters, they had a choice to serve God. Chapter 3, you remember, I don't know where Daniel was at in Daniel chapter 3, but he's not mentioned there, but his three friends are there, and you remember the great idol that's set up, and they wouldn't bow. But it's not only that. Everybody else bows, and here they are standing in the multitude before the king. And he says, maybe you didn't hear the first time. You either bow, or we're going to kill you. We're going to burn you alive in this fire. And he says, our God's able to deliver us, but whether he does or not, we'll not worship your idol, king. As someone has said, they wouldn't bow, they wouldn't bend, they wouldn't break. They were going to serve God, and he delivered them. Now, God doesn't always do that. His son went to the cross. There was purpose behind that. But no matter what, whether we live or die, and that's what these three fellows say in chapter 3, we may die. That's God's business. We're going to trust him and do what we should. But you know that things just kept getting piled on top of them. And later you remember when Daniel is in a preeminent position and he's praying to God three times a day, his peers with him didn't like that. And so they went to the king and had a decree made which could not be undone. Once the decree was made in Persia, that decree would stand. It could not be nullified. And so this decree is made that anyone praying had to pray through the king. Well, Daniel didn't do that. He prayed three times. You remember that Daniel was thrown into the lion's den. You remember that story. He was an old man by the time that happens, contrary to some pictures you may see. And so his peers tried to destroy him. But what you see in this man, again, is that he and his friends are trying to do what's right here. And so they stood together, and that's what we need to do as brethren. As Christians, we need to hold each other's hands up in service to God. Well, further, I would like you to notice their attitude is that they were thankful. They were folks that were very thankful to God. And as you read down in verse 9, they noted that God had granted these blessings. God had granted Daniel favor and compassion in the sight of the commander of the officials. And if you notice down in verse 17, and as for these four youths, God gave them knowledge and intelligence in every branch of literature and wisdom. Daniel even understood all kinds of visions and dreams, which you'll see play out in chapter 2. Now, I preached this lesson just in the last couple months at home. And as I look at that, I think about this thankfulness here. And you see that reflected in Daniel's attitude and really in his friends as expressed here. He understood that his gifts and his blessings came from God. And consequently, he was going to use what he had to serve God. There's a passage over in 1 Corinthians chapter 4 and in verse 7. As they're having problems in the church at Corinth. They're dividing up and they're having cliques and sort of groups and subgroups and everything. And that's what the first chapters of 1 Corinthians about says. There's no room for that among God's people. And he says in verse 7 of chapter 4, for who regards you as superior? And what do you have that you did not receive? But if you did receive it, why do you boast as if you had not received it? In other words, God gave you these gifts, and especially in this particular book, even these spiritual gifts that they were fussing about having. And what we see, though, is the reality that these fellas recognized as well, that our blessings and gifts and abilities, God has provided them. And so they gave glory and served and honored God therein. God works in lives. God not only intervenes in national affairs, which you see in chapter 4, God brings up kings and he takes down kings. You can read about that in Daniel chapter 4. But God works in a way to make men better. Now, I'm not promoting a vegetarian diet, and I don't know. I'm just telling you, I don't know exactly what all the hitches were here. It may be that this was food that had been offered to idols. Maybe it was pork or something that was unclean. Some folks spend a whole bunch of time trying to sort all that out, and none of it matters. It was something that Daniel shouldn't do as God's servant, and he said he wouldn't do it. And sometimes we spend a whole bunch of time talking about a whole bunch of stuff that really doesn't matter, and we miss the simple point. I ought not to do this. If I ought not to do it, then I'm not going to do it. That's the mind that we see they had. On the other side, I need to also be convicted when the scripture says, I need to do this. Well, that's what I need to do. And that's the spirit they had. But they were thankful to God for what they had, every provision that God gave. In 2 Timothy chapter 3 and in verse 5, you remember that there Paul writes and says, there are some who have a form of religion. And there are lots of admonitions throughout the Proverbs about our appreciation and praise and thanks to God, and even more so in the Psalms, that express an attitude of thankfulness and gratitude to God. But the other thing we'll just notice here in brief is the holiness of their mind toward God. Again, coming back to verse 8, Daniel made up his mind that he would not defile himself with the king's choice food or with the wine which he drank. So he sought permission from the commander of the officials that he might not defile himself, because he respected God and because he knew he was a servant of God. That's why he made this decision that we already talked about up here in verse 8, under uprightness uplifts. As he helped and encouraged his friends, also this holiness was a reflection of all his life. And again, you see that such a commitment, such character, such conviction plays out in every aspect of our lives. I don't know exactly how to. I love my children, I'm honored by them, and I'm thankful for them. But it hasn't always been an easy road. One of my sons, Caleb, was a fairly able basketball player. But what they had were shorts that were up here too high. And that was unacceptable to us, even though he had a good amount of ability. And so I got a hold of the uniform company that made the uniforms up in northern Illinois, and I ordered a pair of shorts that would be longer and would cover him, would be acceptable. And he played. When my boys were in school, say Caleb was a good basketball player, they were down to the Sweet 16 and moving that direction. No, it was some of the regionals. They scheduled a game on Wednesday night. We left the choice to him. So you have to make a decision about this, son, whether you go or not. He came and said, you know, can I play? We got Bible study and we got this. Well, he decided that night to go ahead and play. He just felt so much pressure. He played terribly, and he never missed a service again. That was a hard decision, and we were on the edge of crying about it, but knew that he was at a place in his life that he had to make that decision. He knew how we felt about it and what we would desire, and he was not rebellious at all. Had I said, you will come, he would have come. But it was never a problem again. Our youngest son, Jason, he's a big scrapping fella. He didn't play football till his senior year in high school, and he won more trophies and awards than anybody had ever got. He was a good player. He's strong. And he played with all his heart. Again, I'm not saying that bragging. This is the point. Wednesday night service or a gospel meeting. I don't remember which it was now. I think it was a gospel meeting we had. And they had a fairly significant game that Friday night. And he told the coach, he says, I'm going to be there an hour or so late. We have a gospel meeting this week, and I'm not going to be there until after the gospel meeting's over. Well, what officially happened was that the coaches called the other team and said, it is just terribly hot today. Let's postpone this game for an hour and let it cool a little bit. Nobody knows that, but I do. And that was his conviction. I didn't talk to him about it. I didn't even know what was going on until after it was over. But my point is simply this. We do not have to give in to the world, to live like the world, and to submit to the world, and lay aside our values as a Christian, to live in this world as a Christian. And again, I hate to say it again, but there's no there's no pride or arrogance in anything that I just said. So if it came across in any way that way, then I have failed in what I was trying to do. I'm just trying to say what these men did will play out in life if we will. I've got a good friend, Gary Sandusky, and similar things with his boys, except his boys were much better athletes than my boys. His son Scott was the third-rated quarterback in all of Indiana in high school. He walked away. It had come time for Bible study. Off he'd walk across the field. He was going. And so we can live as children of God in the midst of a world who doesn't understand. By the way, the basketball coach was not happy with Caleb postponing the game, but I'll tell you what, his mama, who lived in another town, found out what was going on, and she was proud of my son, and she fussed at her son for not being proud of him. I didn't hear that from a coach. I heard that from somebody else who knew this coach's mother, who lived 20, 30 miles away from us. The point is simple. As we live as a child of God, we live for the Lord, whether we're young or whether we're old. And we just want to live our life so that we're able to meet God for eternity. I thank you for listening so patiently with me. Just been a simple, basic lesson. But I tell you what, there are just hundreds of simple, basic lessons that are powerful throughout the Word of God. And we got to remember that's what this is. This is the Word of God. It's not about a man, it's not about men, it's not about a group of men. It's about God and His will. And as God wills, as a child of God, that needs to be certainly my will. And so we just ask, what are we doing with our lives? What are you doing with your life as a servant of God? Jesus Christ gave a great commission. He said, go into all the world and preach the gospel. Here in Matthew, the 28th chapter, he says, all authority has been given me in heaven and on earth. He says, go therefore and make disciples of all the nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit.